Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. Second hour, we got Jimmy Akin for Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin, as we sometimes do on Fridays. And we try to keep things light and interesting on Fridays. Those who might be involved in a commute home, we want you to have a good Friday commute home. And Darren kind of messed up a little bit. We haven't done the church in the news for a long time, and he picked a really slow news day. Did anything at all happen today, Darren? All right, we've got some news to talk about, of course, and we've got a great man here to talk with us about the news. J.D. Flynn is editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency. He's a canon lawyer. He's published work in the Washington Post, the New York Post, First Things, the National Catholic Register, and other places. He's familiar to those of you who are longtime listeners here of Catholic Answers Live. He previously worked in diocesan administration as chancellor of the Archdiocese of Denver. He and his wife have three kids, and perhaps the most important thing for those of you who have not gotten your cards and letters yet, his birthday is next Tuesday. Hello, J.D. Flynn. Thank you for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You're welcome to call and ask J.D. your questions about the news if you'd like a Catholic take on what's happening in the news around the world. 888-318-7884, our number, 888-318-7884. And if you don't know about the Catholic News Agency, you really should. J.D. and all the folks over there have made it into a legit news agency. You guys do a great job over there, J.D.
Well, we try. I am blessed to lead a great team of journalists here in the U.S. We have a Denver bureau and a D.C. bureau. Then I have journalists working hard in Rome and in the U.K. And then we have a kind of network of journalists around the world. So we're trying to do what we can.
Yeah, yeah. And you cover it very, very well. And it's not easy because I know you know this, but this is a world religion, the Catholic faith. It's everywhere. It's not that there's a church everywhere, you know, like there's some countries there should be a church in, like Saudi Arabia, where there's no church, but Catholics are everywhere, and there's a lot to report on.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, our goal is to cover the news of the church and the news of the world, and to do that from the lens of our faith. So we take as a given that the things the church teaches are true, and we use those in the way that we understand and assess and report stories. But we're journalists, and we think that there's an important work to do as journalists in the way that the church is covered in a serious way, both as the spiritual reality with it, which it is, but also as the human community, which it is, as a sociological reality and a political phenomenon and all those things too. So we try to bring our faith into the best craft of journalism that we can do.
I want to talk to you about there is major news within the last hour about the president of the United States. President Trump was taken to Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C. We don't know if it's precautionary, given that he had a diagnosis that we all know about today of having contracted the coronavirus. I don't know if there's a Catholic take on that, but maybe I could just ask you. Well, I mean, certainly the Catholic take is we pray for the president of the United States. We pray for everyone who suffers the affliction of the coronavirus. And that's not just an act of charity. It's an act of it's a duty. It's an act of justice to pray for those afflicted. God didn't give us all this grace so we wouldn't put it to use. But I don't know beyond saying that the president is in our prayers, whatever people may think politically, we pray for human beings. We don't worry about their political affiliations. But any other take you might have, any other thoughts come to you maybe about how you'll cover this?
Well, it'll be interesting, obviously, because you're right. The first thing is to pray for the president as to pray for anybody who has coronavirus. And I was reminded today that as we pray for the president and the first lady who have the coronavirus, also to keep in our prayers those who work in the White House who are, both political staffers, but also just the staff who keep the White House running, who have been potentially exposed to the coronavirus and who won't have the kind of attention, obviously, that the president will have as they themselves have to be tested and all of those things, and to pray for their families. It's been interesting to sort of watch over the course of the day. You know, early today, journalists in D.C. were reporting that the president had mild symptoms and then that he was going to be given some experimental treatments and then that he had a mild fever. And now to progress from that to being taken to Walter Reed Hospital for a couple of days is pretty serious. Now, it may well be a precautionary thing, but the president, fits into some of the demographics that are a risk factor for you know, a really serious bout of coronavirus.
Yeah.
And so how that will impact this election cycle. I mean, we're just now, you know, just a month from election day itself, and what that will mean for the president's ability to campaign. And, you know, we have an open question already about what's going to happen with debates. And so I think this just in a year of absolute uncertainty, I think this just throws more uncertainty into what's going to happen between now and the election.
Yeah, it does indeed. And, the mortality rate, I heard a news reporter say today, the mortality rate for someone in President Trump's age group, I think he's 74 years old, is five times what it is for younger people. But we do have to remember that five times means five times, you know, it's 1% for younger people, and it's something like 5 or 6, maybe 7 or 8% for someone in President Trump's age group. So while you wouldn't wish it on anybody, yeah, you're still well over a 90% chance of surviving it.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's going to be interesting to see, because you're right about that, I think, you know, there are some initial reports that come out that say people who have the coronavirus and survive it may end up with ongoing sort of pulmonary problems,
right,
or those
right
kinds of things. You know, so I think I don't know about you, but I watch the stats every day, you know, and so I always know kind of what the fatality rate is, but I forget that all those people who don't die, many of them will have ongoing sort of, you know, health challenges.
Yes, that's a very good point. There's just so much that we don't know. So much that we don't know. And, you know, what those, you don't, you, I mean, I, this is the news business, and you're right in the heat of it every day, but you want to admit what you don't know, but you never want to be dramatic about it either. So, and I do think so. We got a lot of maybe dramatic personalities in the secular news media.
Yeah, I think that's so. One of the things that's a great blessing for us at Catholic News Agency is that we are, we're an apostolate of EWTN. We're an apostolate of EWTN News, and of course we want our news to be read by as many people as is possible and as many people are able to read it, but we don't have to sort of chase traffic, be sensationalistic, be muckraking in order to sort of get eyeballs in the way that some secular news outlets have to do, because we're supported by our donors and benefactors. And that gives us the freedom, I think, to try to do the news responsibly. And we try to do that. And I think if you're in sort of in this profit paradigm, you know, sometimes that can call into compromise.
Yep. 888-318-7884 is our number. That's just the news of the hour, and I thought it best, especially since we're doing the Church in the News today with J.D. Flynn, the editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency, that we should at least address the fact that this news has broken within the last hour that the president was taken to Walter Reed Hospital. And we certainly want to reiterate again and again that he is in our prayers. 888-318-7884. However, you are you're welcome to ask whatever question you'd like about the news in the world today and about the news business, because J.D. knows all about all that. 888-318-7884. J.D., can you help me with what is happening with, I mean, there's all this reporting on the Secretary of State of the United States, Pompeo, going to Rome and then not being seen by the Pope. And then there's a bit of a tussle, it seems, between the American diplomats and the Vatican diplomats about what to do about China. Can you kind of tell us what the story is? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, let's start with China. So you probably know, and listeners, you probably know that religious freedom is practically a non-existent concept in China, that religion is highly scrutinized and highly regulated, and people who practice a religion that's outside of the bounds that are established by Beijing are subject to intense and incredible persecution. And we know right now about the Uyghur people, the Uyghur Muslim people of Northwest China who are being interred. You know, more than 1 million people have passed through internment camps, concentration camps in Western China. We know about the persecution of the Falun Gong. We know about persecution of Tibetans. And so we know that religious persecution is a fact of life in China. And that's true for Christians, too. And so for a long time, there was sort of a split in the Catholic Church in China. There was the state-approved church called the Chinese Catholic Patriotic Association. And that Catholic organization was really under the thumb of Beijing. And so bishops would be appointed by Beijing rather than by the Pope and be ordained illicitly and installed as diocesan bishops illicitly and without the communion of the Pope. And then there was an underground church, which was separate from that and loyal to the Pope. And 2 years ago, the Holy See wanted to kind of bring those churches together and do something to protect Christians in China. And so they made this deal with Beijing, a deal on the appointment of bishops and a deal that they hoped would kind of regularize life for Christians in China. But a lot of people say that it hasn't regularized life for Christians in China. Cardinal Joseph Zen, the Emeritus Bishop of Hong Kong, is the best example of that. He says, look, the Chinese government is intent on oppressing Christianity, intent on making us sort of remake Christianity in its own communist image and subordinate the truth of Christianity to communism. And the Vatican-China deal placates that. So it's not really keeping anybody safe. Instead, it's placating Beijing. Well, the Holy See says we have to accept the reality of what is, and we don't want to make there are more than 9 million Catholics in China. They say we don't want to make martyrs of 9 million people, and we want to have some order in the church there, so we're going to sign this deal. But there have been a lot of critics. And one of the more recent critics is the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who says, look, we all can see that things are getting worse for religious people in China, which is true. Xi Jinping has declared a period of the sinicization of religion, which basically means a systematic effort to make all religions conform to the ideals of Beijing. And we know that religion is getting worse during that period. And so Pompeo has been saying to the Holy See, look, you need to speak out more about these things. This deal is keeping you silent when there are real human rights abuses in the church. So he went to Rome this week and said that. And the Holy See, you know, I think there are a lot of critics of the deal, and I understand completely where they're coming from. At the same time, I would not want to be in the position that, you know, Cardinal Parolin, the Secretary of State of the Holy See, is in, where the decisions he makes will decide whether Christians in China go to prison for life, are sent to re-education camps, or possibly martyred. And so there's been this tension between the U.S. pressuring or encouraging the Holy See to speak out more concretely, and the Holy See saying, we've been down this road, we've dealt with a lot of oppressive governments, and we know what we're doing. Now, what's going to happen, I don't know, but that's kind of where things stand right now.
Again, 888-318-7884. Our number, J.D. Flynn, is editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency. We have to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to ask you, because we get asked all the time, actually, about whatever happened to the report on the McCarrick case, former Cardinal McCarrick. And then there's more financial scandals, or at least financial news anyways. You'll have to tell me if it's a real scandal in the Vatican. People want to know about this stuff. You report very fairly on it. I'd like to get pick your brain on it when we come back after we take a quick break. But we do have that store-wide sale going, second day of our store-wide sale. It's that time of year. We're launching it now, and it'll probably continue throughout this month's hundreds of items at 10 to 25% off and more. Some up to 50% off ebooks, MP3s, CDs, books, DVDs, even our School of Apologetics courses, plus $5 flat rate shipping if you live within the continental United States. Visit shop.catholic.com today.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Unplanned, the true story of Abby Johnson.
I would be the youngest director in Planned Parenthood history.
She believed in a woman's right to choose.
I've had an abortion myself, so I don't have any problem with another woman making the same decision.
Until the day she saw something that changed everything.
Tiny, perfect little baby. And then it was just gone.
Now she's pulling back the curtain on the abortion industry. Unplanned.
Available at EWTNRC.com and the EWTN app.
Uh, Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and our guest is J.D. Flynn, the editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency. And I have to say, as a fan of well-done news, I'm a big fan of J.D.'s. They do very fair reporting, very thorough. They don't pull punches, but they're also not dramatic. It's hard to find that balance in the news, but they do seem to find it there, and I hope you will check out the Catholic News Agency for your news. Our number is 888-318-7884 if you want to call and ask JD anything about the Catholic Church in the news, but I'm going to ask what people ask us all the time. So, and because I don't know the answer to this, I just share, I think, in the frustration of a lot of people. And this is one of the things where I think a kind of independent Catholic media, and by independent, I mean not owned directly by church institutions, but, you know, can report in a way that maybe. You know, I was the editor of a diocesan newspaper. It's difficult to have full a sense of independence there. So I think you're able to, and you do a good job of reporting on stuff that's just apparently just seems unacceptable. What happened to the McCarrick report? Why haven't we seen it? Are we ever going to see it?
Those are great questions. But before I answer them, let me just say, I'm a big fan of the Southern Cross, your diocesan newspaper.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, they do a good job.
They do a good job, and I know you put out a good product, too. So,
thank you, Jane.
And I think diocesan newspapers, I really mean this, I think diocesan newspapers are hugely important, and as they kind of go away in financial crisis, I'm really sorry to see that. But that's not what you want to talk about. You want to talk about McCarrick, as everybody does. It was 2 years ago. It was October 6, 2018, that the Holy See announced that it would begin an investigation into its own files and archives, what it had about the history of sort of Theodore McCarrick's rise through the church. And the reason I remember it was October 6, 2018 is because it was my birthday and I was in Rome and I was just about to go out to dinner, and then they put out this statement and I had to go back to the office. And I was a little bit bummed, but I was glad because this investigation that they said they were going to do seemed like it might get to the bottom of some of these important questions. We knew what some of the allegations against McCarrick were. We knew that he would have a trial at the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. We expected that he would be laicized. But what people really wanted to know is, how did this happen? How did this guy spend 63 years as a priest and a bishop with a beach house and abusive seminarians and abusive young priests and, God, abusive teenagers? How did this happen for so long? And no one put a stop to it. And I think we had all thought that this investigation might point to what some of the networks were, or where some of the mistakes were, or where some of the omissions and faults were. So that investigation included not only the archives of the Congregation for Bishops and other offices of the Holy See, but also the Archdiocese of Washington, we know, sent material to it, the Archdiocese of New York, the Archdiocese of Newark. And we know that a report has been completed. And we don't know whether that report will tell us everything we want to know or will tell us practically nothing, but we do know that we've been expecting it to be issued for about a year now. And we don't know when it's coming. And to be candid, I don't know any journalist who has a good theory about why that is. You know, there are some people who say, well, you know, there are litigation windows open in New York and New Jersey right now, and maybe that's the reason that the church can be kind of these look back window legislation, that the church can be sued for historic sexual abuse, and the Holy See doesn't want to release the report during that time. There are other people who say, well, you know, who speculate maybe the Holy See is waiting for some church figures to die who can sort of be blamed for some of these things, which I hope is not the case. I hope the case is, you know, the Pope has proven on a number of occasions during the sexual abuse crisis that while we Americans are in a hurry, he wants to take time to pray and study the Word of God before he acts. And a number of times over the past few years, that's frustrated us as Americans. We've said, we need to do this right now. And the Pope said, no, we're going to have a retreat. No, we're going to pray. And some of those periods of retreat have been, the U.S. bishops have said, have been really, really fruitful in them kind of figuring out what to do in a Christian way. And I hope that the Pope is praying through this and trying to make the right decision about how to present this in a way that will help people to keep their faith and hold people accountable. But there are a number of other possibilities, too.
Yeah,
so we just don't know.
But I imagine in your position, you do hear the frustration from Catholics who are like, tell the truth.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, tear the Band-Aid off. You know, I think we want, I include myself in that. We want to know the truth, whether it's good or bad. I want to know, you know, I grew up in New Jersey. McCarrick was my bishop. Archbishop Myers of New Jersey just died. Lots of people have said, well, how did Archbishop Myers knew about some of this? He made settlements. Why didn't the Holy See step in? Why didn't they stop? I want to know, and everyone else does too, because I want our church to be what Christ calls it to be. I want it to be holy. And so it's frustrating.
Again, 888-318-7884, the number. If you have a question about the church in the news, you're welcome to call and ask J.D. Flynn, the editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency, 888-318-7884. So you've got reporters in Rome, and then now we've got media reports that Cardinal Becciu, who's involved in the finances of the Vatican, may have moved money where it shouldn't have been moved. So first of all, like, how do you assign a reporter to that? What do you tell them to do? Like, who do you go talk to about that? Like,
we have been covering an unfolding financial scandal in the Vatican for a little more than 2 years. And unlike the Vatican, we've filed a lot of reports in that time. So I guess, but you know, the way that you uncover a financial scandal is one piece at a time. And sometimes the pieces don't even make sense, but you just find a connection here and a connection there, something that seems inappropriate here, something that raised questions there, and you put them together. And what our reporting and the reporting of some other news agencies have shown over the past 2 years is that there are a number of complicated relationships between offices, dicasteries of the Vatican, and unsavory business figures, people who have been, in some ways, investigated by authorities for money laundering or fraud. Now, not all the business people they do business with, but a disproportionate number of the people they do business with have been investigated for financial misconduct or have been implicated for financial misconduct in one way or another. And so you start to look for, okay, you see these sort of spokes, what's the hub? And the hub seems to be a set of transactions at the Secretariat of State for the Holy See, which is sort of the central administrative office of the entire Vatican. A lot of them seem to center around a business transaction by which the Vatican invested in and eventually bought a luxury apartment building in London. Now, property is a good investment, right? I mean, everybody says if you have some money, buy some property. But still, it's a little unusual to see the Holy See or any government buying property buildings instead of index funds. It's just sort of not what you expect. And in the course of buying this building, we see people getting payments that don't make sense, payments of millions of dollars that don't make sense, loans from banks that are later shut down for money laundering, people doing acting as both broker and buyer who have these sort of pre-existing apparent conflicts of interest. And so we see this whole transaction has sort of been, seems to be, to represent a lot of financial misconduct. Now, the question that we've been asking, and not just us, the question that criminal financial investigators in Europe have been asking is that, first of all, there's a lot of smoke here. Is there fire? Is something untoward definitely going on? And if there is the Vatican the victim of some sort of a scheme, or are there people in the Vatican who are complicit in what's happening? It's really the same as McCarrick in some ways, right? Yeah. Who are the bad actors? What are the networks that connect them? And then are there church figures who fit into that? Now, in the midst of all that reporting, Cardinal Angelo Becciu, who for years served as the Pope's kind of chief of staff, the sustituto of the Secretary of State, which basically means no piece of paper gets to the Pope's desk without getting to his desk first, the nerve center of the whole church. Last week, Cardinal Becciu was fired from his job. He had been moved to become the prefect of the Congregation for the Causes of Saints. He was fired from that job, and he was also, he resigned the rights proper to cardinals. So he remains a cardinal, but he can't vote for a pope. He can't act like a cardinal. And that is extremely rare. In fact, it's the right. First time that we can find in history that it's happened for financial reasons. It's happened for sexual misconduct and happened for some theological reasons. But for financial reasons, we've never seen this before. And so there are a lot of people who are wondering, well, this, what does that say about Cardinal Becciu's involvement in some of these illicit financial transactions that have definitely been happening around him?
So, so you have the Pope reduced a cardinal to the lay state regarding sexual abuse, and now it appears intervenes to fire a cardinal, and that cardinal resigns the rights of his of the and honors of being a cardinal. And these are very unusual moves. It does seem that Pope Francis is willing to move when he knows which direction to move.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's, you know, Pope Francis was, you probably remember this, but when Pope Francis was elected, it was said that he had a mandate for reforming the finances of the Roman Curia. And that is like lassoing an octopus. It's just an extremely difficult job. But we've seen some missteps and some disappointments along the way. But we also see the Pope has said, look, all of this stuff, all this is coming out financial scandal means that the process is working. And we can see that in one way or another, we're at least having steps forward.
So what will happen to Cardinal Pell now? Does he go back to the Vatican? Does he stay in Australia? Because he was a kind of financial tough guy when he was at the Vatican. At least that was the what he was thought of, was as a guy who could straighten some of this out.
He was. Cardinal Pell was the Pope's reform czar on finances. And in fact, he clashed with this Cardinal Becciu a number of times. Cardinal Pell was going to have an outside auditor do what any ordinary institution does. And Becciu sort of canceled that. So we don't know what will happen next.
Okay. All right. We have to take a quick break. Callers, I'll let you on when we come back. 888-318-7884. It's not all bad news, but we got to talk about this stuff. This is news. And while you got the editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency with you, you might as well ask him. 888-318-7884.
We're waiting for your call. Grab that line and get on board.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Bishop Joseph Strickland of Tyler, Texas, is one of the most courageous leaders in the church, known for his outspoken support of unborn life, Orthodox faith and morals, and reforming Catholic institutions. In his groundbreaking new book, Light and Leaven, he offers a forthright perspective on the state of the church today and calls on the lay faithful to meet its challenges boldly. Touching on topics including parish renewal, the centrality of the Eucharist, the need for prayer and silence in a noisy and distracted age, and the battle between good and evil in the church and world, Bishop Strickland's wise insights and evident love for souls will inspire and edify you. To order your copy of Light and Leaven, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Are you retired?
If so, what has been the hardest thing you've had to adjust to?
That's our topic Monday on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on most of these EWTN stations.
Now we return to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest this hour is J.D. Flynn, the editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency, in many ways, reinventing Catholic media. Just reinventing.
Wow.
Yeah, but I mean, not that other people haven't done similar things, but you guys are putting the whole thing together, reporting on world news, reporting on the news in the church, and doing so in every level in a very professional way. That's the way I see it.
Thank you. That really means a lot. I really appreciate that.
Well, I say that because I want to ask you this. With your connection, do you think you could get the Pope on our show with your connections?
I met the Pope one time.
You did?
I've called him since, but he doesn't call me back. So I don't know what to tell you.
You met Pope Francis.
I did meet Pope Francis. Have you had the chance to meet the Holy Father?
Well, I was in Rome and saw him from a couple hundred yards away. Maybe 100 yards, less than a couple hundred, maybe 100 yards away, and he didn't even say hi to me. He acted like I wasn't even there. It was I was hurt. I got to tell you. 888-318-7884, the number. More stuff to talk about. There's so much to talk about, but I want to let callers get on with you, JD. All right, so we'll take some calls.
Great.
All right, let's start with Mary in San Antonio, Texas, listening on the Guadalupe Radio Network, the extent of which I just heard about the other day. This is a huge radio network. That's why we get so many Guadalupe Radio Network callers. Mary, Your question for the editor, the in-chief of the Catholic News Agency, J.D. Flynn.
Thank you. Thank you, Cy, for everything you do there and all your great gifts.
Thank you.
Just a question. Any updates on the beatification of my own personal favorite saint, Fulton de Sheen?
Great question with a simple answer. No, we do. I wish we did. I was so excited about the beatification. We were all set to go and be there. And I know a lot of people just like Mary. So
JD, you're just going to have to kill the video, JD. Because
I know a lot of people were so excited about his beatification and no updates. So we just, I think, keep praying.
Sorry about that.
Thank you.
Yeah, indeed. I think we Americans know the quality of the man, Fulton Sheen. We know where this is headed in the long run. At least we think we do. But in the short run, man, around and around it goes. 888-318-7884 is the number. I see no reason not to go to John in Denver, Colorado, listening on 1060 AM. So we're going to go there. Thank you very much for that call. John, your question for J.D. Flynn.
Mr. Flynn, my question is, has the Vatican been infiltrated by homosexuals, Freemasons, and communists? And can we identify them by what they do?
All right. Three groups, homosexuals, Freemasons, and communists, J.D., in the Vatican. What do you say?
Great question, John. And first of all, you're calling from Denver and I'm in Littleton. So, you know, if you want to come over and talk about this more sometime, just let me know. Great question. It's the kind of thing that people talk about all the time. We do know that during the Soviet era, there were communist spies, you know, Soviet spies who had low level positions in and around the Vatican. So in a certain way, some of the sort of perception about those things is rooted in that real history. What were the other ones? Homosexuals and Freemasons?
Yeah.
Okay. we also know that, you know, historically there have been real and legitimate, at various times, anti-ecclesial, anti-clerical, anti-Christian Masonic plots in Europe. It's hard, I think, sometimes for us in America to recognize that, because we think of the Masons like a social club, like the Elks or something like that. But, you know, Masons really do have their history in definitive anti-Catholic intentions and a secular vision for Europe and the world. Is there an infiltration of homosexuals in the Vatican? I think it is true, and we know this based upon what has happened, that there are gay men in the priesthood who become bishops, just as there are gay men in any number of professions, and that at times the illicit sexual activity of bishops, whether it's homosexual or otherwise, the illicit sexual activity of bishops has become a source of incredible scandal in the church. We've just been talking about McCarrick, and we know that the illicit sexual activity of McCarrick has become a source of scandal in the church, and we know about other bishops who have similarly fallen. I think the last question you ask is the most important. Can we know it from their actions? Well, what we know from our Lord is that we know a person by their fruits. And so I don't think it's sort of necessary for us to be, I don't think it's necessary or even helpful for us to sort of be mapping out sort of theoretical infiltrations or theoretical sort of networks or cobbles of people, mafias of people who are bent on doing this or that. But what we can see is a person bearing the fruit of Christ in their life, and is a person living the Christian life. And I think it is reasonable for the church to be asking that. It's reasonable for us to be praying for church leaders for that. And I think it's reasonable for us to be attentive to whether or not leaders in the church are manifesting grace, a life of grace in the way that they conduct themselves or not.
John, thanks for the question. Can I add one group to John's question, because it looks to us in the United States sometimes a certain way, and I don't know if it is actually this way, but it looks to us in the United States when we look at it, we see these really remarkable men who are bishops from Africa. And we see, it appears that they are sometimes treated dismissively or even condescendingly by some bishops in Europe. Is that a real dynamic, JD, or is this just an American kind of putting that on what goes on over there?
You guys are asking good questions that are hard, and I'm glad you're asking them. Here's what's true. you know, we talked about the church being both a divine and human institution. And as a human institution, it's an institution that has been led by Europeans for almost the entirety of its existence. We have a South American Pope and a South American Pope whose parents were Italian, and Argentines have a lot in common culturally with Europeans. You know, so still, we still have sort of a similar cultural reality. But we have a church that, from a human perspective, has grown up affected by its cultural surroundings in the same way that if the Vatican were in Philadelphia, you know, things would work differently and look differently. If you're not from that culture, I think it's true that you can easily sort of be on the outside of the way that decisions are made, not be in the room when decisions are made. And I think it's also true that we know that there are many, many areas in Europe where the faith is not taught in its entirety, or where the faith is not taught in its fullness. And to a large extent, that's probably not as true, or to a large extent, in my experience, that's not as true in many parts of Africa. So I think you have people who just have not only competing cultural visions, but also competing visions of the faith themselves, and that can lead to clashes. Is there also an element, I don't know if this is what you're asking, but is there an element of racism or classism to that? I don't know. But I do know that it does have to do with both cultural issues and issues of faith and doctrine.
JD, did you think you were coming here and getting easy questions? Is that what we're not giving you easy questions. John in Denver, thanks very much for the question. I hope that the answer was helpful to you. Our number is 888-318-7884. We do have good news to talk about as well. I want to talk about that boy that's about to be beatified in Assisi, Carlo Acutis. Did I say his name?
Yeah, that's right.
But we'll do that when we come back after the break, because I want to let another caller get on and ask you about a financial question. And then we'll talk about some of the good things happening. 888-318-7884, the number. Up next is Rick in Arlington, Virginia, listening on 103.1 FM. Rick in Arlington, your question for J.D. Flynn.
Hi, Mr. Flynn. Thanks for taking my question. I appreciate the insights you've given us so far. So on the Vatican, you know, finances and the potential issues, to what extent do you believe or does the general investigation effort believe that the organization structure of the Vatican really at least gives the opportunity for potential fraud, if not maybe even pressures along the way?
I believe that to a high degree, the institutional structure, the corporate structure of the Vatican, leaves it open to fraud and malfeasance. And the reason for that is because there's a lack of internal controls. And anybody who has worked at a business or a nonprofit knows that when you don't have standardized policies, protocols, and internal controls, it's easy for money to walk away, it's easy for money to get lost, and it's easy for people with bad intentions to find a weak spot of one kind or another and exploit it. So part of the work that Cardinal Pell was doing was to have an outside auditor, an American, you know, Big Five accounting firm, come in and do a top-to-bottom audit of financial controls in the Vatican, and that didn't happen. It was canceled. Actually, it was canceled by Cardinal Becciu, the guy we were talking about earlier. And a lot of people have been calling for that kind of thing. I think the structure of the Vatican has grown up organically over time, without a whole lot of sort of forethought about its organizational system, you know, systems. And as a consequence of that, you know, when something grows up organically, it doesn't always grow up as well as it might if you had a sort of deliberative plan for how things would interrelate and how things would be audited. Internal audits and external audits would be a huge deal. And we're not there yet, although I think Pope Francis has been clear that he's very open to those kinds of modernizations and reforms of business practices.
Rick, what do you think?
That's great. That's great input. So good to hear. Hopefully they continue down the Holy See's path of corrective actions. So I teach at CUA and forensics, actually. So that's good to hear. Hopefully there'll be some reforms and tighter controls if those are necessary.
Yeah, like when tighter controls amount to getting an audit, that's a bad situation.
Right.
I mean, it's a great point, Rick, but every institution on earth is audited, and the Vatican can't sustain an audit.
or operate, I mean, the kinds of things like a P&L or, you know, a balance sheet, other things that we would consider to be sort of ordinary modes of internal control and accounting. And it's not, again, I don't think that's malice on the part of anyone. I just think it's the way that this thing is so huge and has such an important mission. And then the church so often, and Si, you know this, I think, from your work, it's so easy to put the urgency of the mission of right now ahead of kind of these more laborious structural projects. And I think that's what's happened at the Holy See for centuries.
Yeah. If we're going to talk about procrastinating, then you put me at the disadvantage when I want to complain about the Vatican. So please don't do that. But I mean, come on, the Italians invented double entry bookkeeping. These are the people who invented modern banking. They can figure this out if they want to. We got to take a quick break. Rick, thanks for the call. Your calls are welcome for J.D. Flynn. A little more good news from our episode here of Church in the News with J.D. Flynn right after this. 888-318-7884. The number. We'll be right back.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley of the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
He was a doctor of the church, a Carmelite, and one of the most famous mystics of all time.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. John of the Cross wanted to help all Christians to become saints. One of his most important teachings was to encourage us all to learn how to love. For there is no love, he said, put love, and you will find love. He died in 1591.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. J.D. Flynn, our guest this hour. Hey, next hour, we're going to do Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin. And that's always a fun hour. It's just fun to be with Jimmy. But Jimmy was made to answer weird questions. He was made to answer weird questions. And we've got a bunch of them when we come back for the second hour. Our number here, 888-318-7884, if you'd like to ask J.D. Flynn a question. J.D. is editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency, and his birthday is Tuesday. I'll remind you of that again.
I'll gladly take a weird question. I'm keen for that, too, if it comes up.
Well, okay, here's a kind of a weird question. What do you make of the boy saint of Assisi?
I am really excited about this guy. So there's a boy who will be beatified October 10th named Carlo Acutis. And Carlo died as a teenager. He died when he was 15 of leukemia. And he died in 2006. So he is a very recent saint, so much so that Carlo made a website to catalog Eucharistic miracles, and Carlo was a gamer. He loved his PlayStation. He is an ordinary kid of our own era who had an extraordinary love for God, and I'm excited because I think he's a real role model of living the Christian life in the contemporary world in an earnest and a real way.
I guess part of the process of being beatified is to exhume the body, and now they have the body of Carlo Acutis in a case that you can see in, and it has a glass wall on it. What a beautiful, beautiful boy! Even in death, you just feel so attracted to this kid.
Yeah, he lived a beautiful life, and his body is on display through October 17th. Basically, the city of Assisi is having a 17-day party for his beatification, and his body is on display for veneration during that time. And his heart is going to be put in a monstrance that will be displayed with other reliquary that will be displayed with other relics in the Basilica of St. Francis in Assisi. So his heart will continue to be available to be venerated just right behind the altar of St. Francis in the Basilica.
This is, it seems to me that this is kind of your job in a very special way, JD, that this is real life just as much as, you know, the COVID-19 is real life, just as much as all of our politics and everything is real life. There are young people everywhere who are holy and good, and their holiness matters. It makes a great, and not just young people, old people and people in between. And this is I mean, you're just not going to see anything about Carlo Acutis on CNN.
Well, I'm glad that we can tell the story of Carlo. I think he's such a cool kid. And really, the most fulfilling part of our work is to tell the stories of ordinary people who are living the Christian life in one way or another, who have found some apostolic initiative or who are praying in a beautiful way. When we can give witness, you know, Paul VI says that modern man listens more willingly to witnesses than to teachers. And I think that's true. I think that's what stories do. So when we can tell the story of people who are really finding joy in the Christian life, I'm increasingly finding that to be the most satisfying part of our work.
Yeah. And it's very, very important work, because we've defined news as almost everything that's less important than the most important things, you know, that news, most of life is happening completely out of the view of, and even out of the consideration of, the editors who are making decisions about what goes on the news.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think, you know, news has a public interest value, holding people to account and you know, exposing things that are in need of reform. And I'm glad we can do that stuff. But when we can, you know, as the Second Vatican Council says, when we can use this means of social communication we've been given to inspire, to encourage, to form people in faith, to bolster them, all of us struggle in the Christian life every day. And if we can be encouraged by each other, just by reading about each other, hearing a story about each other, that's a grace from the Lord, I think.
It is, yeah. And our whole Catholic life is the news business. That's the business we're in, is bringing the good news. Like we're an entire history and institution devoted to news. So let me ask you about a couple things. One, the Pope just released an apostolic exhortation. I'm not going to make you do an evaluation of it. I'm just going to tell you right now. It's beautiful. It is beautiful. His reflections on St. Jerome and on...
Oh, dude, it's awesome. It's so great.
It's the best piece of writing that has come out of this papacy. That's what I think. I haven't read them all, but from those that I've read, it's the best. And it just came out a couple days ago. And then in a few days, we'll have an encyclical. So what can you tell us about the encyclical?
Well, the encyclical is called Fratelli Tutti, which means something like all of you brothers, all of you brethren. And it's an encyclical that the Pope says that he was inspired to write as a result of the pandemic. You remember that Italy was locked down at about the same time that we were, and really Northern Italy really suffered with the virus. And the Pope says during that time, he just reflected a lot on the way in which Christians are called to love, to solidarity, what he calls the primacy of love in politics, in social life, in public life. Also, he says he feels called to speak to a renewal of kindness. So it is sort of the Pope's reflections on the world in light of the coronavirus. But I think he touches on globalization, which is an ongoing theme of his. Mm-hmm. And I think he touches on sort of the people who, as he says, are on the existential peripheries, and the importance of giving them a place at the table of society, at the place where decisions are made. So I don't know. I have a feeling, honestly, that the encyclical will have parts that people try to extrapolate only for the sake of the political. We're going to read it here in the U.S. again a month before an election, and I have a feeling people are going to reduce it to the political, which would be, in my estimation, a disservice to an encyclical that probably we need to chew on for a while before we're quite able to fully understand what it's really driving at.
I'd make a bet with you that there will be if he's going to consider those issues that you just mentioned, there will be significant consideration of what we used to call creation, what we now call the environment, And I just want to ask you, what's the Pope's deal with? I mean, he talks about the environment, meaning nature, you know, the nature all around us, more really than any other Pope I can remember.
Yeah, I'm one of those people. I'm one of those people sort of fit into a strange place, because I'm one of those people who was generally categorized as a conservative Catholic, and I love Laudato Si.
I know what you mean.
You do too.
Yeah. I mean, yes, because it's so human. There's a humanism at the center of it, not an environmentalism, and that's right. What I love about it. That it's about
exactly
keeping
right.
The world pristine for human beings.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the first, you know, in a certain way, the first commandment the Lord gives, or one of the first commandments the Lord gives, is an environmental command, right? Till the earth and subdue it.
Right.
Bring order to this thing, because God is a God of order and ordering. For the Pope to sort of speak to that too is a good thing, because the way that we relate to the resources that God has given us is a part of the way that we relate to each other. But a lot of times I think that too just gets reduced to, Pope loves Green New Deal, when the Pope's really sort of talking about just principles of economics and just principles of human relationships and relationships between states and things that you really have to chew on. And then we do them a disservice, I think, when we reduce them to Pope doesn't like air conditioning or, these kinds of ephemeral things.
Can you live in Rome and not like air conditioning? the thing though, and I know I'm putting you on the spot, but I'm just delighted to have you here to put on the spot, JD. But there's actual, I don't know how to say it, because it just upsets everybody so much if you talk about this at all. But the global warming thing is a bone of contention, and the Pope has come down very, very solidly on one side of the fight over that bone. I feel like it puts Catholics who make different judgments about the risks associated with global warming in an awkward and sometimes a little bit embittered position, that the Pope seems to not respect a variety of views on that.
Yeah. One thing that I try to remember is that Benedict bought, I don't know if you remember this, but Benedict had the idea that the Vatican was going to go carbon neutral. I don't know if you remember that, but he put solar panels up, and nobody does. He put solar panels up everywhere, and he bought this gigantic piece of forest somewhere in Eastern Europe with the idea that trees would be planted as sort of carbon offsets for the use of fossil fuels at the Holy See. This is Benedict XVI, Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger. And that helps me to remember, okay, Pope Francis isn't sort of coming out of nowhere with this stuff. I think it's important for us to distinguish between what we have to take as a matter of the church's teaching and what the Pope has to say, as a person who has his own views on these kinds of things. But you're right. I mean, I think that can become, it can become a divisive issue. And it's unfortunate, because at the end of the day, the truths of the faith are so much more important than sort of allowing ourselves to reduce them to the political.
So I'm going to end with a kind of political question. And it's not about the Supreme Court nominee, Amy Coney Barrett, but about the response in much of the media, including the pages of The New York Times, which seem to be suggesting that a certain level of anti-Catholicism is actually a good thing, and that the country would be better off if we were a little more suspect of Catholics. Have you noticed this tendency, and what do you make of it?
Yeah, so Amy Coney Barrett has been getting guff, official institutional guff from the highest levels of power for years now. You remember during her Senate confirmation hearing when Senator Feinstein had this thing about how the dogma lives loudly in you, and that's an issue of concern.
Right.
And now Amy Coney Barrett's covenant, charismatic covenant community is looked at as being a cult that inspired The Handmaid's Tale and all these things. And it's so funny, because on the one hand, we have a presidential candidate who is touting his Catholicism as being a thing that gives him, values. And on the other hand, we see institutional elites from any number of places decrying the Catholicism of a traditional candidate. So it's like, I don't think it's anti-Catholicism. I think it's anti a certain kind of Catholicism.
Okay. That's a fair response. Yeah.
If your Catholicism doesn't put your values outside of the values of the elites, if your Catholicism doesn't make you pro-life, which is unpopular in elite circles of power, or if your Catholicism doesn't give you seven kids, which many people view as being strange, then you probably won't be criticized for it. But if you're the kind of Catholic Amy Coney Barrett is, that's, I think, where there is a real sort of suspicion of her religious beliefs.
All right. That's a very helpful answer, JD. I appreciate that. As a matter of fact, I appreciate all the time you spent with us. J.D. Flynn is the editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency. I feel like I want to make a commercial that says, like, if you want to know what the church teaches, go to Catholic.com. If you want to know what the church is up to, go to the Catholic News Agency. What do you
think?
That's
so nice.
That's a good ad, don't you think?
I think you just made it.
I think I did, but there's music playing in the background, so you're going to have to take that music. J.D. Flynn, you're doing great work. Thank you for being out there finding the truth and telling the truth each day at the Catholic News Agency.
Thanks so much for having me on. This is great.
Yeah, it really is. God bless you, brother. Coming up next, it's going to get weird around here. Jimmy Akin's going to answer weird questions, and I've seen some of them, and they are weird. And so I cannot wait for Jimmy's answers. Hang on. We'll be right back with that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.